What's up, everybody? Clock is ticking here. Mock Draft 2.0. We're about a week away from the start of the NHL season. NHL Fantasy on Ice, Pete Jensen, Rob Reitz, and guest Davey Satriano. What's up, boys?
What's up, everybody? Davey, welcome back to the show. Goalie Master 2021.
Yeah, Happy New Year, guys. It's been a while. I don't think I've been on since, I don't know, the end of the playoffs last year. So excited. We got some drafts coming up.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone. Davey Satriano, ready for the affair. Your first appearance on the YouTube. I see you're dressed for the occasion. Thank you very much. Mock Draft 2.0. Bob Bender is going to lay out and let the boys go back and forth. They spent all day yesterday, right? All day on Monday after New Year's doing a mock draft. God bless your souls.
Well, we're getting to crunch time here, and this is our prime fantasy draft week, something we look forward to all year long. It's been about, a year and a half now at this point that we've been looking forward to the next fantasy draft season. But yeah, Davey had number one pick. We've talked about this debate at length, but your reasoning, Davey, for taking Nathan MacKinnon over Connor McDavid, because this debate has not died down. We've had a ton of people chiming in this week. Even this one weatherman was getting in on us, giving us flack for this. Everybody's coming out of the woodwork to debate this one. So why MacKinnon over McDavid?
So I had the first pick last year. I took McDavid. Nothing wrong with that. But after doing research and hearing you guys talk too, I just thought, look at what MacKinnon did in the playoffs. I mean, he led the playoffs in scoring and he only played, two rounds? The guy who he plays with on his team, there's just more talent there. I just figured his numbers across the board would be better, slightly better. So that's why I gave him the edge.
I think, Pete, even with the divisions now, I would still go MacKinnon. I mean, it's close. It's razor thin, right? But I think when the only thing that makes the tie difference for me and why I agree with Davey on this is just the shots on goal as well. Like having that category, I know for sure MacKinnon's going to beat out McDavid if they both play the full season in that category. I would just rather have that as the little extra weight. And then I think the Avs, too, they're going to be my Stanley Cup pick this year. They are the best team in the NHL. I think they're 1.5 times better than they were last year with the depth additions they made this offseason. So I would double down on MacKinnon number one overall.
And I think one of the big debates here is that people might agree. They'll say, okay, now I understand MacKinnon has outperformed McDavid two straight years in standard categories. Those are the six standard categories for fantasy leagues, which is why we have him number one. But then also one of my big arguments here has been that I think MacKinnon's point ceiling is in the similar realm to McDavid and Draisaitl. And one thing that would indicate that, besides what you said, Davey, about the point production in the playoffs, not many people realize everybody knocks MacKinnon for not having a 100-point season. Last year, he was on pace for 111 if it were 82 games. So that, last I checked, is in that same ceiling range of McDavid, Draisaitl, Kucherov when healthy. Of course, he's not. So, of course, this is the top three guys that you're going to be considering for your fantasy draft here.
Yeah, and you also usually you take things into consideration, like maybe the schedule, who they're playing, home away, like splits and all that stuff. And this year, because of the divisions are the way they are, I don't really think you can say either one has an advantage over the other. So I just said, if I wanted either guy on my team, take out everything else, I think MacKinnon will be the guy who category coverage does better for you.
So we had standard MacKinnon, McDavid, Draisaitl, each of the top three picks. I think you're going to see that in almost every single fantasy league this year. Now, pick number four, we had Artemi Panarin left wing go. Davey made that pick as well, but I was looking at the Rangers early practice lines here, and it looks like Panarin on that second line with Kaapo Kakko. Nice wrinkle there. I think Panarin, Davey, at the four slot is a great pick, especially when you get later on in the draft and you just see how thin the wings get after the elite players. It really, really thins out where, not to beat a dead horse here, but there are going to be more centers available. So I think looking at a wing, left wing at that position, whether it's Ovi, whether it's Panarin, is a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much stock I put into the lines right now just because at camp, guys are missing. But what he did last year, he was a hard candidate. And like you said, we were getting down to the later rounds, guys, and we were just chatting in our document. And it was like, there's no right wings, there's no left wings left. So if I can get one of those guys early, there's always going to be centers. So I agree with you. That's why I picked him there.
I thought it was interesting with the 12th pick in this first round, the first player who was right wing eligible was Andrei Svechnikov. Of course, his primary position is left wing, but this is a guy that people were asking us about immediately when they saw the results of this mock draft. Why is he going in the first round? Why does he deserve to go in the first round? especially, I know we don't put too much stock into lines right now, but he started training camp on the second line away from Aho. I don't really care about that, to be honest, because he's going to be on power play one with Hamilton and Aho and Teravainen, some of the best fantasy players around. But one key thing about why Aho is in the top 10 of our rankings, top 12 in the mock, he covers hits. Only other guy in the top 25 that covers hits is Alex Ovechkin. So there's your answer right there.
Well, yeah, I had the wraparound pick 12 and 13. I normally absolutely despise having that pick. This time it turned out to be, I think, my favorite team out of all the ones that we drafted yesterday. And the reason I took Svechnikov there, I was just so confident. This player went from 0.45 points per game his rookie season to 0.90 points per game last year. That is a jump of an elite player. Only stars are going to make that big jump. And then you mentioned, Pete, I mean, it doesn't really matter where he's deployed at even strength. I do believe it'll be with Aho. Their chemistry looked to take another level when they were together in the postseason before Svechnikov got hurt. So I just think that that combination is going to be electric. I think they're going to feast in that division and really take advantage of those measly matchups against the Chicago Blackhawks and the Detroit Red Wings.
I think Svechnikov, as I look at the entire league, Svechnikov is the player that I'm most interested in watching grow and fill into the role that we all expect him to fill, which is a marquee player. And I agree with what Robbie said. I mean, the upside for him is great. And I'm looking forward to seeing what this kid puts together this season. I think he's ready for the big, big jump to be a top player in this league.
So, Rob, you took two Carolina guys there, and I'm just curious, did you have any thought to select Pasternak? Because Pete took him with the next pick, and I was wondering, guys, how far he was going to slip, just because we don't know how long he'll be out. He might not miss much time, but I was just wondering how far this guy was going to go.
The only reason I think I left him for Pete there is because I'm like, you know what? I've got this wraparound pick. I want to do a stack. I think when you're at 12 and 13, when you have a wrap pick, you got to be a little bit more aggressive than you do otherwise. Like if you have the third pick, that's the best pick in the draft, in my opinion, like having a 3 or 4 pick. But I think when you have to be strategic about, okay, I'm going to set this team up all in, all the chips on this side of the Carolina Hurricanes, that's why I made the pick. And then Pete, did you have concerns about Pasta, or you feel pretty good? I mean, 14 for Pasternak is really good value.
Well, again, I mean, we saw it with Marchand, right? The second we heard Marchand was skating at training camp or set to join the Bruins for training camp, even if he has a no contact jersey for now, I mean, he's back. He's back in our top 10. The second we heard that, he's projected for well over a point per game this season, even if Pasta does miss a couple of weeks. But remember, the initial timeline was like, what, mid-January for Marchand, late January maybe for Pasternak, and now the season starts in January 13th. So, and I think that you called it best, Robbie, when you said in one of the previous episodes, you said, you know, how much things could change when all of a sudden you wake up on the morning of opening night and you see that Pasta's skating or Marchand's skating or, you know, someone you have injury concerns about is going full throttle in the morning skate. So yeah, when I think about that, the chance to get Pasternak in the second round was too good to pass up. And, you know, even if he misses a couple of games here, you know, the second he gets back, he's instantly the top right wing in the game. And back to Svechnikov, I think that he can be called one of the top 5 or 10 wings in the game, left wing plus right wing, like, you know, just the two positions combined. And like Bobby said, the ceiling is so much higher for this guy. I could see him, you know, finishing maybe among the top 5-10 in the NHL in goals this year. I wouldn't put it past him.
Now, Dave, you picked Patrick Kane with the 15th overall pick right after Pasternak. Obviously, we were saying right wings, it's getting thin. You need to get an elite one. Blackhawks injuries. Jonathan Toews now has an illness. It's very murky. We're not sure the extended amount of time that will be for the Blackhawks. How do you feel about Patrick Kane now that he really is the only guy on the team? Obviously, he's an elite player. He's got a great position in fantasy. He normally checks the boxes. But are you worried this is going to be a 2017-18 Chicago team where they all have dash 20s next to their names? They do put up some points, but they've got a big minus there.
I was a little concerned about that, but I thought, you know what? I think he's been injured. What, he had that one injury, but other than that, he stays pretty healthy. He scored, what, 20, 25 goals in every one of his seasons. So we know how consistent he is. And you mentioned without those three guys there, because what, Kirby Jack is injured. I think Nylander, maybe Toews. So they're missing a couple of guys who are going to be be up there. But Kane, he does his thing every year. So I figured, why let him drop? I don't really care what division he's playing in. He's still going to score. What do we have, 58 games? He probably scores 70 points or so, I would say.
Wow. So you're saying that he's not even going to be a point per game. He's going to be significantly better than a point per game. I think he could do it. But yeah, like Robbie said, it's, you know, and we have him, I think, projected for the same point total as Mikko Rantanen over this season, if I remember correctly. But like we're saying, Rantanen could easily be plus 20, plus 30 on the Avalanche and could finish 10 or 20 spots higher than Patrick Kane, even though they have the same point projection if that ends up happening. So yeah, for Chicago, I think that Kane is no longer a top 10 overall pick like he was before the news of Taves and Doc. I mean, Doc is going to be out for a while. The fact that he was in the World Juniors and he got injured is really unfortunate for them in the short term and the long term. Chicago comes into the season with one of the weakest defenses in the league, arguably the weakest goaltending in the league, even worse than Detroit, who added Thomas Greiss in the offseason. So all of a sudden, you know, if you feel like we're harping on the Blackhawks, we only have Chicago projected for two more wins than the Detroit Red Wings this year, which would be one of the worst in the league, if not the worst. So they are rolling with Subban, Malcolm Subban, and Colin Delia. So really, you know, the offenses in that division are going to feast all day.
Goalie, I mean, it's a scary sight, Davey. I mean, you got to be more than a goalie master to make that one work, Davey. There's no chance. I did want to bring up here, Cale Makar went in the second round over Victor Hedman. I actually thought that was a great pick there. I think Davey made that one too. And that's one of those things. Now, I think with the Kucherov injury, you might see that in other drafts as well. You really might see people going for a safe bet like Makar. Not that Hedman's not safe, but just that his ceiling, Makar's, might be a little bit higher this year. I think the only caveat I have now with the Avalanche is it's a great problem to have in terms of like winning and success is that they have so many guys back there now. Devon Taves on the blue line as well. I think that might be the first pair, actually, Makar Taves, which would be incredible. And then they have Gerard, obviously. Bowen Byram's killing it at World Juniors. He might even crack the lineup. It's like they have so many guys. It's like, is there going to be a point share problem? I don't know. But I do think that if you feel comfortable more so with the Avs over the Lightning this year with the Kucherov injury, I wouldn't mind making that pick either myself.
You know, it was a coin flip for me between those two, but I kind of thought what you did. I said, Hedman, he's obviously older. He did have the injury problems, but you think across the board, I would think Makar would probably get more points, although they could be fairly even, but the plus minus is probably going to be the same. It seemed to me like everything would maybe be a little bit the same. I figured we'll go with the younger guy who, you know, rookie of the year last year, he did everything in 56 games, a shorter season. I think he might even, you know, it might be better to have fewer games for a guy like this.
I just wonder if Hedman, just to support him for a second, like, could he go out there and score, even in a shortened season, something like 15, 20 goals as a defenseman after he scored 10 in 25 games in the postseason? And because Kucherov is out, does he take that added incentive to get more involved with the offense? Does Sergachev get going? I think you took him late in the draft, right, Robbie? He just signed a contract to stay with Tampa Bay. Do you see the offense from the blue line for Tampa Bay taking a bigger step forward than we've even seen in recent years because Kucherov is injured? So, and I thought it was also interesting that Vasilevsky and Point went 9 and 10 in this draft. That was where they were ranked, around where they were ranked before the Kucherov injury. So you guys both took those guys. I assume you guys still have pretty full confidence in that team to stay competitive and remain among one of the best offenses in the league and best goaltender in the league in Vasi.
Yeah, I had no problem making that pick for Vasi. I thought to myself, look, I want to go. It was kind of an experimental thing too, because this is a mock draft, but I was like, I want to see how a team like that, where you still take Vasi high, shakes out. And I was pretty pleased with how my goalies on that team turned out. I think in total, I had Vasilevsky, Sorokin, and Blackwood. So I knew that if I took Vasi early, I could roll the dice with guys like Sorokin and Blackwood later and not have to really worry about that, right? So I think Vasi, I mean, stamp of approval for sure. And I think with a guy like Braden Point, Davey, you just can't go wrong after what you saw in the postseason from him. It looks like he can put the team on his back. But I do think for the Lightning, if they're going to succeed again this year, and they certainly should be up there odds-wise, at least to repeat, but I think it will be guys like Sergachev, like Sorelli, like Palat that have to have a much bigger point share than they did last season, and specifically Sergachev, because Hedman, he just always seems to be playing through something. He's a warrior. He's always nagging injuries, always battling, kind of like Stamkos. So you just have to have that little hope that Sergachev does have the potential, like we saw Montreal take him, I think, with like the 9th overall pick a few years ago.
You know, we talked about how there's so many centers here, but I thought Braden Point, I mean, I'm not going to pass a guy like that up, but he, as you mentioned, how well he did in the playoffs. But going back to what you said about Vasilevsky, I did the same thing with one of my teams. I took Carter Hart with my first pick in the 3rd round because I figured, let's see what happens if I take a goalie early, you know, build the team around that. And I think the other two goalies I got there were Elvis Merzlikins, and then I took Matt Murray, figuring, you know, he's going to start a lot. We'll see. The centers, you know, they should be better, tough division, but as you mentioned, in an experimental thing, I just figured, why not see what happens on one team when you take a goalie pretty early, build it around there. And then on the other teams, as you saw, I waited pretty late because one of them, I only had two goalies. So I'm sure we'll get into that later.
I just think that, like, with Braden Point, I mean, if Steven Stamkos is healthy, that's like a adequate replacement in their lineup for Nikita Kucherov. And then it was flip-flopped last year. Stamkos was out and Kucherov was there, and Kucherov and Point led the NHL in scoring in the postseason. So could Stamkos fit in on the right side? He plays primarily wing these days. Absolutely. So therefore, there may not even be that much of a drop-off if Stamkos is healthy. And then the other thing on Vasilevsky I wanted to add. So on NHL.com/fantasy, we have our back-to-back sets, the totals for each team. And Tampa Bay is tied for the lowest with Pittsburgh and the New York Rangers. So you bet that that helps Vasilevsky's fantasy stock, maybe makes him worth taking in the first round again after we kind of flip-flopped on that a little bit. Tristan Jarry, that helps his value. And Igor Shesterkin, who I took, in the 3rd or 4th round here? I think the 4th round. That helps his stock for sure, that it's not going to be an even timeshare with Georgiev. It's going to be primarily Shesterkin if he's healthy, I think.
And I think too, like, the interesting thing about round 3 in this draft, like, Carter Hart kicked it off. Then we saw the wings go. We saw the Matthew Tkachuk range, the Line A range, Stamkos, Huberdeau. I mean, those are guys that you have to have in that range, because we mentioned it. After that, it does start to drop off quite a bit. And I think that this year too, there was one team that I assembled that had only one center only skater on it. And it's my favorite team to plug and play. I mean, I would be so confident that that team could go head to head in any sort of matchup. And it just kind of, I think, reinforces the notion that in fantasy, you can really get away with that, particularly this year when it's more condensed and you've got games every other night for your team in fantasy, that you don't need a center only. And it's almost like a wasted roster spot, it feels, this year, just because, you know, there's going to be injuries. You know that there's going to be injuries, and that mostly affect the wing position more than they do center only, because you can go to that waiver wire at any time, pick up a top six guy, even if it's on a lesser team, Davey, you can pick up a top six center only guy and get some points in that week to cover, but you cannot find those wings as easily. So I think, just, you know, to reinforce the notion here, if you are a first time fantasy player, go after the wings in these first couple rounds, get good in that position, and then, you know, you can wait a little bit for the centers.
You know, I thought the same thing for one of my teams with goalies. I said, as you mentioned, these teams aren't going to be playing two games a week. You know, they're going to be playing probably four games a week. So I said, for one team, you know, maybe I don't want to have or need three goalies, because if you can get two solid ones, they're going to get at least three starts a week. So it's kind of similar to how you mentioned centers. They're always out there. But to me, I figured the goalies, I might not need as much depth as I would in a normal season. And as you mentioned with the wings, you know, if you don't have them, it might be tough to get some. They'll always be out there, but, you know, with what's left towards the end of the draft, that's something you want to address earlier if you can.
Now, one of my conundrums in this draft, and I would say probably a lesson learned for me, was my team where I took Elias Pettersson at 20, which I thought was great value for him. We have him ranked in the top 12 in our rankings. So I took him. And then the next round, I took Quinn Hughes on the same team, which is a great stack, one of the best young duos, forward defenseman duos in the league. But then I got to the 4th round, and the best goalie available was Freddie Anderson, who is number 2 in our win projections for goalie and team wins, behind Vasilevsky. And all of a sudden I realized, damn, I just took a goalie from the same division as this stack that I did earlier than that. So that was a miss on my part, but I wanted to mention it to everybody, because don't make that mistake in your draft. pay more attention than you ever have before to the divisions, because it matters if you're playing a team 8 to 10 times. Those teams in the Canada division, right, the North, they're playing each other 9 or 10 times. If you pick the wrong goalie, you can have some messed up splits in your matchup that night.
Well, just like picture what the categories are going to be for that week. Like if they have a home and home, Pete, right? Like Petey goes off, but then Freddie, you know, gets the brute end of that. I mean, it's going to be like you're going to have good goal columns, but then your save percentage is going to be all whacked out. I mean, I think it's interesting because I felt like a little bit of the same dilemma where I had, I think, three Carolina Hurricanes in the first four rounds where I did Aho, Svechnikov, and Dougie Hamilton. But that's just the way it shook out because Dougie was like the next best defenseman on the board. And I'm like, I already made my bed with Carolina. I might as well just go full on with it. But then I'm like, as the draft went on, I'm like, okay, like I really went all in on Carolina. And if for whatever reason, Davey, there's always surprises every single year in the NHL. For whatever reason, Carolina falters a little bit. Maybe their goaltending's not good enough, whatever it may be. Then I'm out. There's no hope for me in fantasy if all three of those guys do not hit.
Well, the thing is, as you mentioned, because of how short the year is, I think you're going to see a shorter leash with guys, and also some guys you'll just pick up very quickly rather than waiting. Like, you know, last year I had PK Subban for 2 months and that was too long, but I got rid of him. If I have a defenseman after 2 weeks who has, you know, 1 point or isn't producing, he's gone. I'm going to the waiver wire, because in this shortened season, you can't really afford to do a wait and see approach, in my opinion.
Yeah, we waited and saw the goalie realm play out, and then it got to the fourth round, and then 6 of the 12 picks were goalies. What's your general strategy, Davey? Because once you start getting into this realm, you start to venture into the timeshares a little bit. I mean, the Boston one, Rask and Halak, is definitely a 1A, 1B, but Halak's going to get some playing time. Grubauer was taken with the last pick, or the second to last pick in the fourth round. He is going to split time with Francois. So, I mean, he should be the 1A, but it's just like these guys are not clear starters. So how do you digest that? And what's your takeaway from this mock draft, like from the goalie tandems? Did you target any? Did you secure any? And are you loving that strategy or not?
I didn't actually secure any. I kind of wish I would have. I think I tried with one of the teams and I was unable to, but I noticed you took Halak and Rask, which that's something I want in a shortened season. I want a goalie tandem because that's 56. You're getting, you know, barring injuries, you're getting every single start. So to me, that would be the way to go. As you mentioned, if you don't get one of those top five goalies, Vasilevsky, Hart, Hellebuck, it gets pretty murky after a while, but I think a guy in the middle rounds that I would target would be, you know, Markstrom went kind of low, I thought, for us as far as behind other goalies. He's a guy I think, you know, he's going to probably get most of the starts in Calgary. I think he'll do well. Carey Price, as you mentioned, it's a very tough division, but I feel like he's also a middle tier guy, and I would probably take him even above a guy like Jordan Binnington personally. But as you mentioned, if you're not going to reach for one of those top five goalies, you need to make sure you secure one pretty soon after. And I do like the tandem approach, especially this year with the amount of games there are.
Well, here's where I got into trouble with that, because I took Rask and Halak, but then for my third goalie, I made the mistake of going within the same division again by taking Ullmark from the Sabres. So it's like I should have, ideally, to make that a good strategy, I should have taken a goalie from a different division just to have the security of that. I'm not worried about Boston. I'm not saying that, but I do think I would just rather have someone else from a different division. Now, it's funny, the risk versus reward in fantasy, when you saw Samsonov go, you saw Grubauer go, you saw Shesterkin go, all before true proven veteran number ones in Price, Markstrom, and I would even say Binnington now fits into that category. So it's almost like you always, I know we're kind of all sharks in this sense from fantasy, but like you want to hit the home run, you know, you don't want to take the single. You don't want to take the safe single all the time, but Carey Price in this case really is the safe single. Same thing with Markstrom now on the Calgary Flames, same thing with Binnington, even though his peripherals are down a bit, they came down to earth. He's the safe single, but I'm swinging for the fences, man. I'm trying to hit the freaking walk off grand slam with Samsonov. Now, granted, could that backfire? Big time. Will I be play the waiver wire and there will be nothing out there? Maybe. But that's a risk that I'm willing to take at that position, especially this season when he's going to play every other night.
Well, I think I found a way to get a goalie tandem that I think can do both things, have the ceiling of the Grand Slam and also get you some safety net as well. When I got the Vegas tandem, I know they're in the same division as St. Louis and Colorado, but each of those guys is probably getting like four or five shutouts. Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury splitting some time. Lehner's the 1A, Fleury's the 1B. But when you look at them playing teams like the Sharks and the Ducks and the Coyotes, even teams like the Wild, I mean, they're gonna really dominate a lot of those games and get you a lot of shutouts. So I was able to get Robin Lehner in the third round, which I was comfortable with, mid to late third round, and then Fleury in the eighth round. What's better than that? I mean, that was I don't know that Fleury will fall that far, but you know, everybody's looking at him in a different light right now. The second Lehner maybe deals with an injury or something, he's a capable top 5-10 starter, no questions asked.
Yeah, the thing for me where you mentioned about the goalies, I like the fact that you had a tandem, but for my teams, and I said, I'm not really looking at who they're playing against in the divisions, just because we had to each draft a bunch of teams, it was kind of hard, but going forward, yes, I'm definitely going to be looking and say, hey, because personally, I really don't want that conflict. I'd feel more comfortable this way. You don't have to say, well, if he gets a hat trick, you know, it's three goals again. So going forward, I'm going to actually pay attention to that. And it should be a lot easier when we only have one team to manage, not, you know, three, four.
For the listeners, a little inside look. I'm going to do my job on the air with Davey, Rob, and Petey right now. Just breaking out. News is out. West Division is sponsored by Honda. North Division, sponsored by Scotia. Central by Discover. East by Mass Mutual. So when we refer to the divisions, let's get the sponsors in. Let's do our partners right, okay? So this is what I would do before the show. Off air, I'm doing it on the air. Focus up. Get everything right. Get the sponsors in there when referring to the divisions, okay, Davey?
So how long before the Predators hang the 2020-21 Discover Central Division participants
there
banner?
There you go. Is that there what you go. That's for? How we have to weave that's it in. That's it. Just baby. Weave it in. Move forward, boys.
Fourth place banner maybe for this year.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that'll get them in, though. That'll at least get them in. So maybe they could get a real banner out of that. We'll see. But round 6 and 7 was pretty standard. I think you're going to see across the board, no matter what platform you play on, there's guys like Kuznetsov, Pacioretty, Giroux, O'Reilly, Barzal. All those guys kind of fall in that range. Almost every draft they've ever done, that's where they go. But I think we get to see some really interesting things happen here in round 8. And Pete, this is where I started to cherry pick a little bit these early season line combinations. I know I'm kind of getting aggressive with it, but Burakovsky, his ADP in Yahoo is south of 130. Like he's going like 140 in some drafts in Yahoo. I took him here at 88 just because I see that he's playing on the top line with McKinnon. Is that too aggressive to get ahead like that? Or do you really think that this Avs team is so safe that you can reach for Burakovsky like this and feel all right about it?
I'm honestly stunned when I saw that ADP. I mean, sometimes you look at an ADP, like say for David Perron, and you see that he's going in like 150 and you're like, all right, let's scale him back a little bit. You don't have to take this guy in the top 75 overall. Let's keep him in the top 100, but let's move him down a little bit in our rankings. You don't need to waste a pick on David Perron if you can get him, you know, 5 rounds later. But Burakovsky, I don't think we changed his rank very much even after seeing that, because we think he's one of the safest picks in the top 100 overall, you know, the latter end of it. And that's assuming that he doesn't play with McKinnon, which he very well may not, considering it's always been Landeskog, McKinnon, Rantanen. But between injuries and then starting the season on the line one, I mean, Burakovsky could score a point per game this season. He really could. And I think he will if he plays with McKinnon, who's our number one ranked player. So I thought it was a great pick by you. It didn't faze us to see his ADP so low. We saw a breakout, career highs across the board for Burakovsky last year in his first year with the Avalanche after coming over from the Capitals where he played in the bottom six. But, I mean, there's still room for a further breakout, right? The full-fledged. That's what's coming this year for Berkey.
Well, you know, he's left wing and right wing eligible. But, Rob, I was looking at that, and I was wondering if you had any thought to pick one of the two guys who was taken soon after that between Lafreniere and Kaprizov, because I like both of those guys. I was trying to see how long I could wait to, you know, to get them. And it seemed they were both pretty much right there in the top 100. Did you have any Did any of you say, you know, maybe I'll go for one of the young rookies instead of the safer pick?
I like Kaprizov's ceiling a lot more. I've said it before, but Burakovsky on the top line with MacKinnon would be another level. Like, that would be the guaranteed gold mine versus Kaprizov, which might be a little bit up and down in his first season. So, and Lafreniere, I'm scarred with Coach Quinn last year not using the rookie deployments like we thought they would. So I don't want to go back to the well. I was a Kako guy last year. I'll go in again on Kako this year. But I cannot, for the life of me, be checking the lines for the New York Rangers every Monday morning at 9 a.m., hoping that Kako is somehow on the first or second line. I can't do it. I can't do that with Lafreniere. I like Lafreniere a lot. He's a physical player. He's going to get hits this year. I think he's going to be way better than a kind of Chris Kreider for them, which is already really valuable in fantasy. But still, I can't do that this year with Laf. I think I'm out right now.
The scars are really deep with Rob. I mean, really deep. The scars are deep rooted with him and David Quinn, which is understandable because Kako, you know, he was not getting the playing time that we all expected him to get in his rookie season. So is it going to be the case with Lafreniere? It's a very good point by Robbie. And you know that Kaprizov is going to play with Minnesota. He's going to play. Billy Guerin's going to throw him in. Okay. And the coach over there is going to throw him in. He's going to get some playing time.
Yeah, you're already hearing that the teammates are impressed by him. Why wouldn't you be? I mean, I actually got Kevin Fiala and Kaprizov on the same team here, which is, guys maybe who could play on opposite wings for a team that's rapidly rebuilding like the Rangers are. But I think the Wild are just so much more under the radar. The Rangers, you could see guys get a little overvalued, whether it's Shesterkin or Laf. I do think that Kako is a great deep sleeper. He was on Robbie's list. You can find all our lists on nhl.com/fantasy. Pretty much anything you could imagine for your draft, you'll find a list story there. So definitely check that out. Otherwise, you're missing out. But Kako has that second line right wing spot with Artemi Panarin on the other side. He started there because the Rangers really have no other choice. Jesper Fast, who played there a lot last year with Panarin and Strom, he's not on the team anymore. He's on the Hurricanes. So while Laf has, you know, Kreider to compete with and Panarin, you're not going to be able to compete with for even strength minutes in the top six. Kako has the top six role. He also has something that, you know, he learned the hard way last year, but now he has that rapport maybe with Coach Quinn, and the second year could be a big fantasy slam dunk for him.
I'm going to go out on the record here. This is going to ruffle some feathers. I think, Bob, you're not going to like this take. I'm going to make the take anyway. As the offseason has progressed here, we're getting closer to puck drop. Ilya Sorokin, a guy that Pete has been on for a long time now, years, I am starting to really warm up to, and I'm going to go on here and say that Sorokin is going to be better than Shesterkin as soon as this season. Why do I say that? I've been reading between the lines here, going way too deep like I normally do, but Barry Trotz said this the other day that it meant so much to that team, that organization, that Sorokin joined the team in the bubble, started to practice with them last season. Okay, that is a lot of experience for the player. His pads already look completely broken in, wall white pads, totally dirtied up with pucks. I think Sorokin's got the work ethic, got that next level thing. And icing on the cake here is that the Islanders, every year we're picking against the Islanders not to make the playoffs or to do nothing in the playoffs. They prove us wrong every single time. And Barry Trotz has a perfect system for a young goalie. Mitch Korn there is going to have a great influence. I think Sorokin's going to turn a lot of heads this year. And I think Varlamov, you know, credit to him for kind of bouncing back in his career, but he's very susceptible to losing his job. Sorokin's going to upseat him this year and take the throne in that division.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a few weeks into the season, if it was like a, you know, the Islanders do that thing where they split starts. This guy was so good in the KHL, and you think, well, you know, it's the KHL, it's not the NHL, but you mentioned it with Mitch Korn and the system Barry Trotz has. Look at how Robin Lehner did. He won the, you know, he was a Vezina finalist almost that year where he was there. Varlamov last year should have been there. So with what that system does with goalies and just how well this kid has played, and you mentioned the fact that he was with the team there and got to experience that, I wasn't sure where I would want to draft him, but I think, you know, he'll probably get, he'll be starting at least 20 games this season, I would think.
Right. So I actually took Varlamov at 77 and then regretted it later when Robbie took Sorokin from me. I don't want Varlamov on his own, right? You got to get the tandem if you take Varley, and that's where you get kind of tricked by the goalie tandems a little bit when you're taking one guy just to secure the other one. And then he ends up going maybe a round earlier than I suspected for Sorokin. But That's what happens in these fantasy drafts. If somebody likes a guy or someone hears all these good things about him, he's going to reach for him a round earlier than you think, or earlier than his ADP by a round or two.
Well, there was a stretch last year where Varlamov was 4-9-2 with a 900 save percentage. The only reason he didn't lose his job permanently was because Thomas Greiss couldn't get the job done. This season, if Varlamov brings his inconsistencies over, Sorokin is not going to lose the job. He's going to take it over as the full-time number one. And Trotz, he finally last year elected to go with Varlamov over Greiss as the true number one. He'll do the same thing without hesitation this year to crown Sorokin.
I've tried to be the devil's advocate with Sorokin and say, let's see him play in the NHL before crowning him, you know, the next Billy Smith. But what Robbie said earlier about Barry Trotz and the team and being around the team in the bubble, that is encouraging if you're drafting Sorokin. And it's the system. It's the Barry Trotz system that has made every goaltender in the crease with the Islanders look good, look great at times. So if you're talking about being better than Shesterkin, I can totally see that. I get it. I just didn't want to anoint him the next Billy Smith, but it doesn't sound like you guys are doing that. You're taking him at a reasonable portion of the draft, and you're expecting him to be good based on the Barry Trotz system, the Korn, the KHL experience, all of that, his pedigree, and I get it. I just wanted to pump the brakes a little bit on Sorokin. Petey was mentioning him, what, 5 years ago, it seems like. It seems like 5 years ago Petey was mentioning Sorokin. I just want to see how it pans out. But yes, what Robbie said earlier, it is encouraging. It is definitely encouraging because he's going to be in that system, and Barry has got positive thoughts on him, and that's good.
And they have such a deep, underrated defense. The one thing the Islanders have to do, I mean, Sorokin's their big upgrade technically of the offseason. They got to get Barzal signed. He's the only notable restricted free agent left. Everybody else signed. So that's the last thing on the agenda for
Lou will get
for
that
Lou
done.
And
Lou will get that done. You know, Lou will get that done. He's only got a couple more kicks at the can. He's going to get Barzal done. Don't worry. And it'll probably be a deal where you look at it and say, wow, that was a good deal for Lou. That was a good deal for the Islanders, because that's what he always does. He always gets a good deal.
Maybe worth the wait. We'll see. So, yeah, as we get deeper into this draft, I think we're faced with some tough decisions, especially on defense. Things really thinned out later on in the draft. I actually, on one team, did a little defenseman handcuff. I got Tony D outside the top 100 for the Rangers, and then handcuffed him with Adam Fox, who I think all of us think could usurp him a little bit and maybe take the power play one in the next year or two. But Tony D was top 10 in almost every defenseman category. And not to get too heavy on the Rangers on any particular team, but I think they, with that offensive ceiling and how good they were on the power play last year from January 1st to the end of the season, what were they, first or second, something like that? So yeah, invest in the Rangers blue line. They're going to score a lot of points this year, I think.
Yeah, they were first over that span, and that's the range you're going to see a Mark Giordano go as well. But Pete, I think in your case here, going with a younger guy like Fox in this format might even be better this season because the upside's just higher, whereas you kind of know what you're getting with Giordano. It's more of a boring pick, but I think Fox has that unlimited upside. Now, one interesting thing here, Davey, that I did notice is you took Evander Kane, 117 overall. Kane's a guy that always finishes top 50 because of his hits coverage, because of his goals coverage, power play goals too. I thought that was interesting, but the reason why I bring it up is because you took him over taking a second goalie at that slot. So what was the rationale there? I love the Kane pick, by the way. I think it's a good thing you did it, but I wonder why you did it.
Well, my rationale was I was looking at the goalie list and there were really not many options there at all. I had Carey Price at that point, and I said, you know what? Basically, I looked around and said, most of you guys pretty much had, of our other teams, had two goalies already. So I wasn't really worried about losing. You know, I felt like who I had to pick from, it was not going to make or break the team at that point. And as we mentioned with Kane, the category coverage is usually good. Hopefully the Sharks can bounce back this year. Brent Burns, I'm assuming he's going to have a much better year. They got Devin Dubnyk in goal. So I just felt like the Sharks this season were going to be more competitive, even playing in that division. And with Kane, I just love everything he does, you know, hits, the penalties. Pretty much I figured he's a more complete guy than a, you know, a fifth string goalie at that point.
Davey, there will be a white van outside your residence within the next couple of days to take care of that internet. It's been 10 months and you still haven't taken care of the internet. That's okay though, Davey. We got you the microphone, but we need to get you a little bit upgrade with the bandwidth, if you will. But I mean, you didn't break up terribly there. I'm just letting the listeners know that Davey needs an upgrade with the internet. It's been 10 months. I'm going to take care of that for you. There'll be a white van outside your residence knocking on your door. Don't be afraid. Take care of the bandwidth for you. Okay, Davey?
Okay.
Yeah, I think the Sharks maybe still need an upgrade in goal, but Dubnyk is maybe viable. We'll see. I don't know. As long as they're giving away the puck as much as they do, I know they're healthy. I know they have a ton of playoff experience, but they give away the puck too much. They don't bring the effort at even strength that they bring on the penalty kill. And it's the same old story with them. So that's why you see a lot of these guys on the Sharks, like Evander Kane, Brent Burns, Timo Meier, they rack up the hits because they don't have the puck sometimes. So after the giveaways, so, you know, that's a trend there. And I wanted to mention too, we have our hits league draft guide, which I think Robbie in our experts league last year, when we finished second out of 12 teams and nearly won, we probably would have won the league if the season didn't get paused. We drafted an incredible team. And I think one of our biggest things in that draft was we took our own hits league draft guide. It's the perfect thing. You prioritize guys, you know, everybody that has the high floor. And some of those guys have high ceilings too, like Svechnikov, Brady Tkachuk, right? Who are some of the other guys? I mean, Elias Lindholm's like a 30 goal scorer that covers hits. You go down the list, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Evander Kane is another one. Dubois took a next step in the playoffs. So yep, if you get like seven or eight guys, half of your team from that list, you're setting yourself up for a very high floor and probably to win your rotisserie league, to be honest.
Yeah, and even head-to-head, if you're playing with hits in standard Yahoo categories now, I would use that guide to draft myself. I mean, we had Tom Wilson on that team, too. I think by weight, we were the heaviest team in fantasy that year, Pete, and we ran away. Every single week, we're like, we know we're winning hits. We're fine there. Now, in our draft, moving ahead, I'm going to go to round 12 here. We have kind of the bounce-back range begin where guys like Dubnyk are going. We had Bobrovsky go at 135. Now, I think this pick here with Bobrovsky was interesting because you're getting a number one goalie at pick 135 on a team that could easily get into the third or fourth seed in that division with the new format. So I would have to say here that I'm okay. Now, granted, Bobrovsky finished, I think, sub 400 last season, so you wouldn't get any value essentially on this pick if he finishes there again. But I really do think I would bet on Bobrovsky bouncing back, not to the level of him being a Vezina quality goaltender, but to him being a serviceable number one, kind of like a Peter Mrazek, where he's going to rack up the wins, but maybe have a little bit lacking save percentage this season.
Well, he was the third goalie on that team, and the other two I had were Connor Hellebuck and Darcy Kemper. And I know Kemper's in the tough division, but I thought that's pretty much three number one starters on a team. So I like that, even though Bobrovsky, yeah, as you mentioned, we saw what he did last year, but they could sneak into the playoffs. I'm expecting his numbers to be better than last year. So for a third goalie and who the other two that I had, I thought that was a great pick at that spot.
Yeah, as much as I mentioned the Predators earlier and like the Lightning are still locked to make the playoffs, even with the injury to Kucherov, and Dallas still has a great chance at the playoffs, even though Bishop and Sagan will miss most of the season. But there may be a spot up for grabs in that central, and it could end up being either the Predators or the Florida Panthers. And when you look at the Florida Panthers young core, I know they got a couple of guys playing in the World Juniors, most notably the starting goalie, Spencer Knight. But of course, you have the kid Lundell, you have Denisenko, you have Owen Tippett. I mean, this is a team that's setting itself up really well. We'll see if some guys get integrated from the names I just mentioned this year. But yeah, I mean, this team's setting itself up really, really well for the future and maybe even to be super competitive in the short term. And Bobrovsky was always a top 10 goalie almost every single season. Last year, probably an outlier. Could he bounce back, have individual success, and maybe steal a playoff spot for the Panthers when nobody really expects it? I think maybe he could. I don't know. Maybe I like Florida a little bit more than Nashville.
The thing about Bobrovsky, you would think, right, a little pressure off his shoulders. He seems to play better when the pressure is off. So hopefully, you know, for Florida Panthers fans, I mean, can they catch a break? They've needed a goalie for how long? They go sign Bobrovsky and he has a dog year last year, a real dog blank year. So hopefully pressure's off a little bit. He plays better. And if you draft him, you can get him low and he can perform better than he did last year.
So, Bob, where do you think the Panthers will finish in the Discover Central Division?
The Discover Central Division. Tough division. They're all tough, right? I mean, you look at them. I don't know, Davey. I hope they get in. I don't know. Probably sixth, right? I don't know. I'm not sure. But
they're making the playoffs, Bob. And the reason you mentioned it yourself, there's no pressure anymore. Like, they got rid of some higher contracts this offseason, and you think that's a loss. I think it's addition by subtraction. I think the bringing kind of those cheaper guys in there, they brought in some vets in there, they brought in some young guys with upside like Wenberg. I think they're going to get the playoffs. And I think Coach Q is the perfect guy to coach without pressure. No one's expecting them to do anything this year. That's how they'll capitalize. That's how they'll sneak in there. And I think this format too, just by them playing every other night, when Barkov gets hot, when Huberdeau gets hot, when a guy like Denisenko starts to chip in away. Hey, good odds there, by the way, for rookie of the year for Denisenko. I think that's why it's going to benefit the Panthers a lot. Now, I'm not saying that would happen over an 82 game season. You know, they would slump eventually, but I think because it's a tighter window, they'll sneak in there.
And Duclair too. We didn't mention him, but he's on a 1-year deal. Quenville, he played with him for a little bit in Chicago.
I forgot about Tony Dukes.
He's been on six teams, I think, in 6-7 years, but it's a 1-year contract for him. He's trying to prove he was an all-star last year on the Senators. So, and if he plays with Barkov and Huberdeau, which he could, I mean, that's a guy.
Huberdeau.
I think P took him in the 15th round. So that could be a great pick.
Huberdeau and Tony Duke, baby. I love it.
176 is where I took Tony Duke. And last we checked, start a training camp for the Panthers. He's on the top line with Barkov and Huberdeau. So what's not to like? The guy scored 23 goals last year with pretty much no line mates. You know, Ottawa was in rough shape for most of last season. So he had a career high in shots on goal with like 180 something, and then 23 goals. Could certainly take it a step further and be among the league leaders in goals this year on an affordable contract for sure in Florida. And then I think, maybe even play on power play one. There are some spots up for grabs with Dadonov out and Hoffman out. Hoffman's going to the Blues. So, yeah, it's his spot to earn, to keep, and be that third wheel to one of the best duos in the league.
If we keep talking, this is going to go into mock draft 3.0 and then potentially 4.0. So you guys better start putting some bows on these rounds and players and sleepers and whatnot. Okay, we got about 10 minutes to wrap it up here.
So Davey, I'm going to take the show here. Last two rounds, we had interesting picks. We had World Junior picks like rookies like Stutzel going, who, by the way, I mean, this guy, it was unbelievable. He was hitting everything in sight. He was on every scoring chance for Germany, playing 20 plus minutes a game. He's for sure playing for the Sens this season. Now, I think Zegras went as well. I took Zegras late there. I mean, he's unbelievable. This kid's got the best hands in the tournament. But I will just put this caveat out there and say, if you take the rookies late, like we like to do, you're going to have a hard time dropping them. Davey, look no further than you and I last year with Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko. Every morning we'd go into work, sit next to each other and say, is today the day that I'm drafting either Jack Hughes or Kaapo Kakko? And we would always say no, because as soon as you drop them, they're going to have that one breakout game. So just know what you're signing up for. If you take these high-end rookies in the last two rounds, there's a lot of upside, but there's also a lot of headache throughout the fantasy season as well.
A lot of days spent at that water cooler, Rob, just discussing, hey, is this the day I'm going to drop them? But I think with this season, you know, I think it's instead of 9 games, it's, I think, 7 now for the rookies. So some of these guys could play, you know, 6 games before they're sent to AHL junior, wherever it is. So, you know, you could get one of those guys and, hey, Zegras comes up, you know, doesn't have a point in 6 games, and then they toss him down. So, as you mentioned, it's tough with the rookies because especially this season, it's just so short. But if you're drafting one of them, you probably want to hold on to them for a bit.
And other non-rookies who are, late in this draft, like Cody Glass, I was choosing between Cody Glass and Alex Tuch and kind of lean toward Glass because he's dual eligible as well, but he plays center and maybe could play with Pacioretty and Stone. So that's why Tuch, I think, went in our first mock draft, but didn't go here. Because I went in the other direction there. Nick Robertson, another young guy who could crack the Maple Leafs top 9. Bowen Byram, you know, great ceiling in fantasy, but just the question is, can he make the Avalanche lineup? Can he crack the lineup? Just because they have so many good defensemen right now. But then it's funny, like all these young guys at the end, right? And then the second to last pick was Joe Thornton. And why Joe Thornton? Because he's playing on the top line at training camp with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So I took him with the second to last pick. But what do you guys think of this? Is this like some weird storyline, just like last hurrah for Joe Thornton, get him up there and get him motivated? Or is this a real thing that could stick?
He's an anchor. I love Joe. I love Jumbo. Great locker room guy. But man, oh man, he's going to weigh that line down. I mean, there's no way the speed in a condensed season is going to be able to keep up with Matthews and them. There's like no way. And I'm rooting for the storyline, Pete. I hope that this sticks because it would be a fantastic storyline. But if I'm giving actual advice here, I'm going to bet against this trend all day long.
Last round, I mean, it's worth it. Second to last pick. But I agree with you. I don't think... Now he's, what's he going to be like, a third defenseman? He's going to be all the way back there shooting pucks, giving addition assists to those guys in the offensive zone when he's, you know, chugging along. So I don't think it's, you know, he's not a guy we take in fantasy. He's probably not going to be drafted in most leagues, but if he starts in that line for the season and you want to get him there for a week, I'm sure he'll be out there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be taking a flyer on old Jumbo. This is just a way to get him involved early, you know, get a little buzz with Toronto, you know, be a part of something. This guy's not sticking on the first line. There's just no way that's happening. And it's a little feel-good story early, but Rob is right. This guy is going to slow down that line if he's on it. There's no way they even play 1 second with him on the top line during the season. I'm going to go say that. I just can't see it happening.
And VC's on line two right now with Tavares. Tavares and Nylander and VC's the second line. I mean, this would be very 2021 if this does stick. And we have Thornton as a line one guy. And we have Jimmy VC as a line two guy. I mean, that would be, I've seen it all if that happens.
How soon before they throw Wayne Simmons on the first line?
Yeah, that could happen too. I mean, I just think eventually it'll be, you know, the names like Zach Hyman. It'll be, you know, Mikhaev, maybe even Robertson over the course of the season.
He's lighting a fire under these youngsters' rear ends by putting Thornton there on the top line. And he's trying to motivate these younger guys to say, you know what, I should be on the top line. I mean, that's just coaching 101, right? I mean, let's not be fooled by what is happening here with Joe Thornton playing on line one. Let's not be fooled. I'm not drafting Joe Thornton on my fantasy team. God help me if any of you guys do in your real, you know, fantasy teams. I'd be very, very upset if that happened.
I'm playing him in DFS. You can bet on that. Him and VC. I mean, I'm doubling down on that Leafs exposure if that carries over.
Sure, that's a DFS play. All good. DFS, you're throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping to hit big. That's fine. But if you're drafting Joe Thornton for your season-long fantasy team, you got an issue.
What will be higher, Thornton's age or his price in DraftKings?
41 years old. He... 2 years ago, I think when he played last in the top six for the Sharks, he was on like a 57-point pace. So he can still play. He's a big body to play on that line at certain points. I'm sure they'll put him back up there for different shifts in different games as opposed to just, you know, him wasting away on the fourth line. But yeah, I think that his size could make it interesting. He's like Marlowe was there. He's like, he gets along really well. He's already hanging out with those guys. He hasn't even played a game for them yet. He's hanging out with those guys around the holidays. So
we've hit our allotted time on Joe Thornton. Okay. We're now talking about his holiday schedule with Austin Matthews. Come on now. It's time to move it on. Move on, folks.
Anyway, the guy can pass. If Austin Matthews leads the NHL in goals this year, Joe Thornton can set him up, whether it's on the power play or even strength or any other situation.
All right, Davey's got one more thing to say before we wrap it up. I took Mike Hoffman in the 11th round. He's on a PTO. I don't think any other PTO guys we had drafted, but this guy was like supposed to be the second best forward behind Taylor Hall, unrestricted free agent forward. Doesn't even have a contract. He's going for a PTO. Figured he's definitely going to sign with someone if it's not with them. And if it's with the Blues, Tarasenko's out, he could find his way on the top line.
Highly motivated.
So
Davey's playing money ball over here in fantasy with his PTO guys.
I figured, hey, 11th round for Mike Hoffman. As you mentioned, he's a right wing, so we needed those at that point. So that's my last analysis.
Well, you can follow along with this mock draft, nhl.com/fantasy. You'll see it all live there. Also, if you have any questions on Instagram and Twitter at the same handles, at NHL Reese, at NHL Jensen, at Aircheck for Bobby, at David Satriano for Goalie Master Davey.
And do us a favor, just leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If we're answering, you know, we let you guys know sometimes, but if we're answering your questions in the middle of the night, early in the morning, it goes a long way to support our coverage, which is year-round coverage. This is the hottest time of year, but we're doing the dirty work all season long, and we're going to have a ton of podcasts in the regular season. So follow along. We appreciate you listening. Leave us a review. For Davey Satriano, Bob Bender, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, good luck in your mock drafts. Good luck in your actual drafts when they come. T-minus 1 week before the start of the season. We'll check back with you at least one more time again before puck drop on opening night, January 13th. Thanks for listening. NHL Fantasy on Ice.